Taking a break from laying down the law in the courtroom to lay down the law in the sports world. Here's Judge Dan Jacobs on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
And they called it puppy love. Oh, I guess they'll never know.
There we go. John Davis, we're getting a puppy today. That's why we have that song going. Isn't it a good day?
Okay. Okay. What kind of puppy?
Boxer mix.
Okay. That'll be a cool dog.
Yeah. Because you can tell John's like, what the hell, man? You guys usually play some hardcore rap.
Yeah, that came in. I was like, what is going on with this song?
Yeah. I don't know what's going on here. I'm in the unique position now of defending the great John Elway from one of his own teammates here. So, John, I did an article for the website, I did a pleading for the website, a court order for the website, if you will. It was called The People versus Slarathan Evans. And basically I found, Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans guilty of crimes against Broncos country. One, for their reckless advocacy of Andy Dalton as the number one free agent target for the Broncos. I thought that was pretty reckless. What do you think about that?
As far as now, again, Schlereth's list is pretty facetious.
Well, no, you pointed that out to me last week, but Tyler also kind of, came to my defense on that. That's true, because Mark responded was like, well, Jacobs doesn't get sarcasm, but that's not the only. He's been pretty clear on the record saying he's still his number one guy.
Like, yeah,
he's
been. They still do advocate for Andy Dalton. My thing with Andy Dalton is, when you think if anybody thinks Andy Dalton, which by the way, I mean Andy Dalton had some success in Cincinnati, but those were those years he had success. So did AJ McCarron. So there was a pretty good roster around, AJ Green, there was some guys making him look pretty solid out there. Still never won a playoff game. He also, so that's kind of my take on Andy Dalton. Dalton's a good, serviceable guy, belongs in the league, but if they're advocating for bringing him in, who are you advocating for him to come save? Because like I've said, if you need Vic Fangio to save his job, then okay, go get Andy Dalton. Ryan Fitzpatrick's a lot better, but go get Andy Dalton and start Andy Dalton, and then Vic Fangio can go, 3-2 maybe in his first few games if everything works out and save his job. Now, if you're advocating to bring in Andy Dalton because you somehow think that makes the Broncos better and you think it puts them in some sort of position to win, no way. No way. Andy, look at this division. Look at the landscape of the AFC. All these other teams are going to be taking steps forward next year. Andy Dalton doesn't somehow put the Broncos in some sort of position to stabilize anything. And we've been down this road. Case Keenum, Joe Flacco, what are we doing? If you're bringing him in to save Vic Fangio to make that hire look more brilliant than it's not, or are you bringing him in? And also, if people think that the presence of Andy Dalton is going to somehow make Drew Locke better, they're out of their mind. I've never, he gets a good veteran guy to show him, blah, blah. Andy Dalton's not coming here to save Drew Locke. Ryan Fitzpatrick's not coming here to save Drew Locke. They're coming here to start and win. And I just don't, the competition. Yeah, because all those Super Bowls have been won with quarterback competitions. And if you're bringing it in to save Vic Fangio, that's the only way Andy Dalton makes sense. Other than that, just roll out Drew Locke again.
All right, so you're kind of one of our unofficial historians here. You remember everything like a dang, hawk. The other part was this, it's the roster stupid theory. And their response in the morning was, John Elway is being washed up, or excuse me, diminished was their word. And then, essentially, I guess what they're advocating is anybody could have won Super Bowls with the rosters that they had. My recollection was John Elway won the Super Bowl MVP in his last game. I looked at the numbers. It's funny, you mentioned Joe Flacco. Mark his analysis was Joe Flacco was going to come here and win. He literally bought into the John Elway, Joe Flacco's a Super Bowl winning MVP quarterback. His numbers, John Elway's numbers, were pretty much identical to what Joe Flacco's numbers were, you know, prior to him coming here. It's interesting to me. So I'm sure I don't want to bias you. What's your recollection? Was he washed up?
Was Elway or Flacco?
Elway when they won the Super Bowls.
Was Elway washed up when they won the Super Bowls?
Yeah.
No. What are you out of your? Who? No. I mean that's
what El, I mean, that's what I'm. What do you mean? Am I out of my mind? What Slareth and Evans are saying. Like if they was diminished,
no, he wasn't washed up. Look,
he co-tailed it.
Gravy train. Needed. Here's the thing. You have to have good rosters to win Super Bowls. Duh.
Right.
Nobody's ever won a Super Bowl with a bad roster. But nobody. But the people that have won Super Bowls with mediocre to less than mediocre quarterbacks are outliers, as you and I have pointed out. They require all-time great defenses. Not great defenses, anomaly defenses. Defenses that you couldn't build if you devoted everything to it. That type of rare defense. Those types of defenses that happen, we've got the 85 Bears, we got the 2000 Ravens, the Buccaneers in 02, 2013 Seahawks, 2015 Broncos. 5 out of 55 Super Bowl champions. That's Dan, I don't know if you've ever studied like multiple regression where you have the line of best fit, but you have to throw out the outliers because they screw everything up because they're outliers. You have to have a good quarterback pretty much. Like, I mean, your odds go way up. And yes, you do need a good roster, but like John Elway versus Joe Montana, this year when everybody's like Mahomes versus Brady, it's the Bucs versus the Chiefs because we had Elway versus Montana, and how did that work out? You do need a good roster, but if you don't have a good quarterback, especially in this day and age, your odds of getting there are 5 out of 55. Like, it's just not going to happen. And Elway was not washed up. You know how I know? Because when he left, they went 6-10. When he left, they won one playoff game until they got Peyton Manning. It's not hard to see. I mean, John washed up. Go back and watch the AFC Championship game against the Jets, his final year. You know, go watch the late game in the season against the Chiefs in his last season. It's just not even. There's no evidence to support John Elway was washed up. Get out of here, guys.
It's like, Mark, weren't you there, man? Weren't you laying?
Yeah, you were there.
Weren't you laying on top of him, like smooching with him in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, come on, washed up, man, get out of here. Like, that's look, in the 1997 AFC Championship game happened in 98, the first year they won the Super Bowl. Terrell Davis is the best player in the NFL. 3rd and 6 to seal the game at Pittsburgh. Do they give the ball to Terrell Davis? No. They have John Elway throw it to Shannon Sharpe. When the game was on the line, you still went with the Hall of Fame quarterback. And that's why John Fox was so stupid in 2012 for running it on first, second, and third down and not letting Peyton throw. Mike Shanahan could have ran the ball with TD, ran the clock down, and punted. But he said, I got John Elway. He's still John Elway. Shanahan called a play that they hadn't practiced since training camp, and the Broncos executed it. So to call John Elway washed up is ridiculous. It's not. And he was Super Bowl MVP in his last game. I don't know how you make that argument.
Yeah, well, I invited Mr. Elway on the program so we could just smash on Schlereth for making the argument. Considering my track record of being so very fair to Mr. Elway throughout the years, I'm surprised he hasn't gotten back to me yet. But
right, exactly. He Elway's always talking about how he tunes into Dan Jacobs every week.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he's an avid listener. But anyway, I'm glad we got you on the record there. And to be fair, washed up is my interpretation of what they were saying. I think their exact term. Their exact term was diminished. Make no mistake about it.
Well,
they were saying. That they were Hall of Famers before and they were diminished. And I'm like, I just don't think that fits what they were getting out of Elway at the time. You know, I just don't think that was accurate.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's making and yeah. Okay, good. 'Cause I was going to say, I listened to him all week. I don't remember washed up. saying he's diminished is subjective. There's less. I mean, he was hurt. I mean, he was injured that year, but that's just, I don't know, man. You take Elway off that team and they go 6-10. So that's what happened.
All right, so something else we had a conversation about Justin Simmons last week, and then Stokely and Zach were nice enough to have me on to talk about the article. And then, man, Zach was busting my chops trying to give me only two choices about Justin Simmons.
Tag and trade or sign him? Probably one of those two.
It was just, well, you got to reset the market. Yeah, it was probably tag and trade or reset the market. I'm like, or tag and, you know, give him a top 3-5 deal. Like, you know, like, I think you have pretty good leverage if you tag him. And I know Zach kept, you know, saying I wasn't answering the question. He was saying, I know what Zach was saying was, well, they tried that last year. It didn't work. But, well, they tried that and offered him number 7 money, not number 4 money or number 3 money. And there's another year, another risk factor. And, you know, it's Justin Simmons, I characterized, had a nice year. Really good, you know, a good year. I don't know if you'd say how good, I don't know, John, how good of a year would you say Justin Simmons had?
I thought he had a great year.
Great year.
I thought he had a great season. I mean, he's a ball hawk on a team that doesn't have any. When you never play with a lead ever, it's hard to play defense. It is hard to play, to get turnovers and to get momentum swinging game-changing plays when you don't have a lead, or when games aren't even close. And that's one of the reasons I think they struggle with turnovers, is the Broncos can't score. So teams don't have to be that risky when playing the Broncos. They're offensively speaking, they don't have to play desperate. And then on defense, you kind of do have to play desperate, and it just puts them in a bad spot. But I think Simmons and Kareem, you know, I think Justin Simmons, I've said it, I think right now, if you were to rank top 5 players at their position in the NFL, he's the only Denver Bronco that would land on any of those lists. So setting the market for him, Cliff pointed it out, it's less than $1 million that separates like 1 and 5 as far as highest paid safeties. So you might as well just set the market for him, because the difference between 1 and 5 isn't that much. You correct Elway's mistake of not keeping him. You send a good message to the locker room. You kind of symbolically show that things are a little bit different now under George Payton than they were with John Elway. So that's what I would do with Justin Simmons. But if you're Simmons, because of guys that they have kept on the franchise tag, Demaryius, Clady, Doomerville, Vaughn, it hasn't always worked out as much as they would have liked. So if you're Justin Simmons and you get that, you've got history kind of working against you. Now, none of those players' performance affects his. They happened in the past. But, you know, he's got to go out and earn that contract. But given his character and how he plays, I think he's more than willing to put everything into to earning that money. So I think they got to keep him.
All right, so let's spend a little bit of time on defense. By the way, I'm not sure how fair that accurate your characterization of the defense was, because I heard nothing but how great a job Vic Fangio's defense was at keeping the game close.
Oh yeah,
I mean, that's what I heard every week. 39
turnovers. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's the Vic Fangio. Yeah. Look, it's individual effort is kind of what I'm talking about. The Fangio defense is I like John Fox a lot, but at some point, and Kliss, I haven't got to read it. Mike Kliss has an article up today about the Fangio defense spreading throughout the NFL. Haven't got to read it, but it's probably pretty interesting, because I know the Patriots basically stole his defense to beat the Rams in the Super Bowl, but it appears right now everybody's doing the Fangio defense a whole lot better than Vic Fangio. We'll see.
It's funny about this defense, though, because they tried so hard, and I don't begrudge, that was one of the reasons that you and I were kind of bullish on the team last year, is you can't begrudge A.J. Boye and Gerald Casey got hurt. You had no reason to believe that was going to happen. Vaughn got hurt. You had no idea that was going to – it was a freak injury. So it just didn't work out. But now, man, that defense, which was once so promising, it is decimated. They really don't – especially depending on what happens with Justin Simmons – they don't have hardly any key pieces. I mean, you got Chubb, and even Chubb, like, you know, I don't want to be a revisionist historian. Like, he had an okay year. He should, to me, he was, for all the trouble he got, for, you know, for the chirping he was doing, he had some very disappointing unsportsmanlike penalties. You know, people want to say bounce back. Name me the impact plays he made in games where they mattered, you know?
Well, you're exactly right, for one. And it goes back to last year. And it was a cheap call in the game. He was injured most of 2019, but it was a cheap call. But against the Bears, he had a personal foul. It happened, I think, the Chargers. It happened maybe the Dolphins. Bradley Chubb's gotten personal fouls in key moments in the games. And that is troublesome. Bradley Chubb has been good. He's been above average. Bradley Chubb has yet to take a game over in the 3 years he's been in Denver. He's yet to do that thing where, you know, and he doesn't have anybody playing opposite of him. You know, Chase Young has, I think, Kerrigan opposite of him this year in Washington. Vaughn always had Dumervil or DeMarcus or Shaq. So that must matter on some level. But we have yet to see that moment where an offensive lineman is just demoralized by Bradley Chubb to where he just can't leave the guy alone, you know, to where he can't just – he's just around the quarterback all the time. And that's part – you know, Vic's got to find a way to get him in. And that was my issue this year, is when Vic would dial it up this past year, Miami, the Jets, Broncos' defense looked great. But he's like John Fox at the sense that, like, hey, Vic, it's not 1992. Call an updated game plan.
Yeah.
That's what happened to John Fox. The game passed him by. And it's what's happening to Pete Carroll in Seattle. Play good defense and run the football. Be a little more boring. That's not how it's done anymore. And teams see right through it. But when he dialed it up, I mean, Tua, they had to pull Tua because of what they were doing to him. So if you call a defense like you know what year it is, he does a lot better. But to your point, they don't have – it's not that they have some mediocre pieces on this defense. There's positions where they don't even have anybody.
Right.
So – this defense is going to need a major overhaul. We don't know what it's going to look like. Jarrell Casey and A.J. Boye were extremely short-sighted, short-term thinking, micro decisions, and that's why they're in the position they're in. They're not young anywhere. They need to get young in a lot of places, and they were just hoping guys worked out. They signed veterans that they hoped still had something left, and it's why they're in the spot they're in right now.
Well, outside of sentimentality – and I don't want to hear leadership because, you know, I'm tired of that argument with Von Miller. We keep hearing how he's going to be a great leader, and then now he's in the papers with all the criminals, you know, not all the criminal stuff. That's not fair because Von has been, outside of that first year, Von has been great off the field. But he does have the criminal thing now and the social media stuff. He has the stuff in the media that is not flattering. I don't want to say it. We overpay this guy because of great leadership. But is Von Miller any different than short-sighted signings of Jarrell Casey?
No, not at all. Cause he's better than they ever were. 80% Von Miller is better than Jarrell Casey on his best day.
Okay.
80%, 85% Von Miller is far more effective than Jarrell Casey, AJ Boye. And Jarrell Casey's a great player. Don't get me wrong. Orlando told me watching Jarrell Casey, what a nightmare Jarrell Casey would be to block. So it's not to diminish Jarrell Casey, but he's not a Hall of Famer. And Von Miller is still a guy, when he comes on the field, until he proves otherwise, opposing offenses are going to say, whatever we do, we can't let this guy go off. And that's the shame of what John Elway did on the offensive side of the ball through Von's prime years, is he allowed teams to scheme Von out. So, you know, we'll see. But Von diminished is the morning guys would like
whoa,
to
whoa,
say.
Yeah, but I'm not saying he's not better, but I'm saying is he short-sighted and is that he's
no.
Is he in the long-term future of the team more than 2 years?
There's levels. I mean, in 2009 was Ray Lewis, who as a person I despise Ray Lewis. As a player, he's great. Was Ray Lewis and Ed Reed in 2009 probably in the long-term prospects of the Ravens? No. But they got injured in 2012. Broncos go up there and whoop the Ravens. They get those guys back in the playoffs. Their energy, their experience, their Hall of Famers. There's a difference between keeping a Hall of Famer and keeping a guy like Jarrell Casey. Hall of Famers can still turn it up, can still inspire, can still do a lot of those things. You just don't get rid of him. Look, the Broncos got rid of Shannon Sharp. Shanahan let him walk. He goes to Baltimore the next year and is the only guy, you know, him. He makes the big offensive play in the playoffs against the Broncos. Shannon goes and wins the Super Bowl. Hall of Fame presence is different than really good. Love Chris Harris Jr., love Emmanuel Sanders, love Jarrell Casey. They exist on every team. Von Miller does not exist on every team.
Right, yeah. The only argument I would say is you're talking about those guys. Those are all examples on competitive teams. Like, the Broncos are not going to be competitive for the next 2 years.
Well, hey, when they brought back Champ Bailey in 2010 or 11, hey, they weren't going to be competitive. Within a few years, they were. I'm with you, though. We're not going to get a Peyton Manning probably in a couple years. I'm with you that the competitive edge of the Broncos in the next few years is probably not high unless they get Deshaun Watson.
Right, if they get Watson.
So, yeah, you're probably right in that aspect that it'd be great to keep him, but why pay him all this money? That's why I don't think they should honestly go out and pay a guy like Lavonte David. What are you paying him for? We're not going to win. So I do understand that argument that it's not that they don't want Vaughn, but why pay all that money for an aging guy when by the time the contract's up, they still may not be winning. I mean, there is some legitimacy to that for sure.
Yeah. All right. So, did I get an inkling that you think the Broncos may have made a mistake with the wide receiver room?
Yes, the Broncos. Yeah, and I wrote about Tim Patrick this week. You know, Tim Patrick, if the Broncos, he's restricted, so they could put like a second round tender on him. I don't know if you can even do a first round tender. Dan, if you're Green Bay, would you give a second-round pick for Tim Patrick?
Yes.
I would. If you're your guy's Miami, who needs some receiving playmakers, I'd give up a second-round pick for Tim Patrick and ink him up, because you're not going to have to set the market with him. You have to give him a nice deal, but you're not going to have to set the market with him. And he was an afterthought last year in Denver.
Not on this show.
Not okay, right. No, you have. Victory lap that. You were beating the drum for Tim Patrick when everybody else was moving on from him. But Cortland Sutton is coming off an ACL, and he's in a contract year. So if they can't get they should have extended Tim Patrick the second he started showing the leap that he made last year, which was very obvious pretty early in the year that Tim Patrick had made a step towards being a really good wide receiver. They should have extended him. Why did they not do that? With Cortland on an ACL, Judy and Hamler coming along slower than they would have liked, Tim Patrick became the only guarantee they had in that room. I mean, everybody talks about the receiving room and how Deshaun Watson will really be excited about it. What do we really know? We know Tim Patrick is good. Cortland's coming off an ACL. If he gets back to healthy, he's really good, but he's in a contract year. Hamler's a question mark. And Judy, I think we all agree, will be fine. We just don't know when that'll be. So Patrick was the only guy you had. And now, I mean, they can't – maybe they try to get Cortland Sutton on an extension, but you haven't seen the ACL yet. That's too risky. The only slam dunk they had, a guy that they don't have to set the market for, they're now going to probably get priced out on Tim Patrick, because Buffalo, I'd give up a second-round pick. Green Bay, I'd give up a second-round pick. Baltimore, I'd give up a second-round pick. I mean, Kansas City, I'd give up a second-round pick. Tampa Bay, even. I mean, if they don't want Godwin – you know, there's a lot of teams that would line up for a guy like Tim Patrick that could come in and take that offense to the next level. The Broncos should have extended him. Cortland Sutton, it's going to take too long. The second he shows that ACL's better, his agent's going to probably tell him, wait till free agency. And so, unless they're worried about the injury again. So the Broncos better figure it out. If it's not Tim Patrick, the second they know Sutton's okay, they better extend him. Because we could be sitting here in a year from now, Dan, with Judy and Hamler as our number one and number two wide receivers.
Well, why not? They're going to be great. They're Hall of Famers already. We've been told that.
Well, exactly. That's the problem. Judy might be fine. Hamler. The other thing is, like, you got to have size at this position. And they're both your bigs. Like, you don't have either of your big guys re-upped. And, man, Tim Patrick, he's a good locker room guy. Me and Orlando walked past him one time. And Orlando's like, he looks like a power forward. And let me tell you what, when Orlando Franklin thinks a guy looks big,
yeah,
that's pretty impressive. So your guy, Tim Patrick, the Broncos, John Elway, who's gone now, all the focus is on Justin Simmons. There's a little something here that George Payton needs to rectify. I would be beating down Tim Patrick's door right now, you know, 3 years, $21 million, guarantee 10 to 12 of it. But Like Billy Turner.
If you're Tim Patrick, why would you sign him?
His agent's going to tell him no. Yeah, his agent's going to be like, don't take that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what happened to Billy Turner a few years ago. Broncos waited too long, and his agent was like, you're going to get paid. Ignore him. And that's what happened.
Well, it's not only just getting paid. It's about opportunities, too, because if Sutton comes back, I mean, and you know they're still going to be like, we got to, like you could say, we got to help Hamler and Judy get over. So once Sutton comes back, if, you know, assuming he comes back healthy, like, you know, Patrick's going to have to be fighting and scraping again to, you know, even though he shouldn't have to, because I think he established himself.
He's the number one. Yeah. And he should be, if he's on the roster next year, that depth chart should read wide receiver number one, Tim Patrick. He is by far. Now, again, if Sutton gets healthy, Sutton's the guy. I mean, he is.
Right.
But I mean, damn, I mean, imagine if you got Deshaun Watson and you're rolling out Patrick and Sutton at the one and the two. You're going to kill teams.
Yeah,
it's Decker and Demaryius, and it's
Fant.
All over again.
Yeah, and Fant, you know.
And you got Fant.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Let Judy figure it out. Hamler, I mean, really, he can be a big play guy. But, man, if you got those dudes and your big sell on Deshaun Watson is look at our receiving core, and you can't even promise either of your two best guys beyond next season, they screwed it up.
Yep. Hey, all right, DenverFan.com. You can check that out. Hey, thanks, John Davis.
No problem. Thanks, Dan.
I appreciate it. All right, you want to react to that? Get the RamosLaw.com text line. Hit it up, 303-713-1043. Your chance is next.